Welcome to Happily Ever After is just the beginning. Keeping your relationship not just together, but happy, and we mean truly happy, is part art and part science. You've come to the right place. Here's your host, Leslie Dorries.
If you've been to a wedding recently, you're going to recognize that marriage isn't just about the two people who are standing up taking their vows. It's a thing that influences and impacts friends, families, and even the communities. And I remember the last wedding I was at, they actually asked the people who were present if they would make a commitment to supporting the couple who was taking this next big step. And of course, everybody says yes. And I think that just like with the vows that the couple's taking, the community has no idea what it is they're actually promising, or maybe they do, but they just don't know how. And I know one of the frustrations that I have when I tell people what I do after people's eyes kind of glaze over and you can see them going back in their mind about what they just said to me about their relationships. But a lot of people would say, well, you know, they know that there's a couple in trouble. Maybe it's a brother, maybe it's a friend, but they don't know how to suggest to them getting help. And this is one of the really frustrating things, I think, because when our friends get divorced or somebody in our family gets divorced, then we're kind of getting divorced as well because it changes our relationship with the people. So knowing how to talk to your friends and family about their marriages when they come to you for advice, I think, is a really critical thing. And so my guest today is Dr. William Dougherty. He's the professor of marriage and family therapy at the University of Minnesota, and he's the force behind a new program called Marital First Responders. So, Bill, thank you for coming back, and thank you for sharing this program with us. So I love the Marital First Responders. We have, you know, the EMT and the fire department for marriages is kind of what I'm understanding this is.
Yeah. Thank you. It was great to be with you again, Leslie. The only thing I want to mention, I love your intro, is that this is really first responding for everyday problems as well as big emergency problems. So it's both kind of first aid and emergency.
Well, yeah, because you know, we've all been in a situation where either we're out with a group of, in my case, women, in your case, probably guys, and somebody starts talking about their spouse.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's really easy to jump on the bandwagon and go, yeah, men are terrible, or women are this, or yeah, my wife does this. But that's not really very helpful.
No. It's one of the things I've learned in this work is that when we shoot from the hip because we're interested in making our friend feel better at the moment, mm-hmm. we're apt to cause problems.
Well, it was really funny because when you say that, because when my friends found out that I was becoming a marriage and family therapist, they're going, oh, great, we can't wait. And I said, no. I said, I can be your friend or I can be your therapist, but I can't be both, because as your friend, you want me to agree with you and tell you, you know, how awful the situation is. But as a therapist, I'm going to go, and your part in it is what?
Right. Well, so part of what we're saying, though, Leslie, is that although friends say, they may say they want that, when we actually asked people in a survey, we did a national survey of 1,000 people, what people say is most helpful is not people agreeing with them and ganging up on their spouse. They actually put that into the non-helpful category. It's one of those things that feels good at the moment,
right,
but then later doesn't feel so good.
Well, because I think that it's really hard, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I know you've done a lot of research and you've got the numbers, but I think that that's one of the things is that we're actually, when we bring that up, we actually want somebody to help us. Yes, validating our feelings is great, and I think that can happen anyway, but we're actually, I think there's a desperation out there for what could make this better.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and, you know, we make a distinction between validating feelings or being empathic with feelings versus validating a perspective. Okay?
Okay.
That's a distinction that gets lost. In fact, not only with lay people, but with therapists, individuals, right?
Right.
So here's an example. So my buddy is saying, you know, once again at a family event at Thanksgiving, he was the butt of the jokes from her family, and she was ganging up and egging them on, telling them more stories about what an idiot he was, okay?
Nice.
And he just is just humiliated and angry and frustrated. And it's the difference between my saying, oh, that sounds awful, awful, I'm so sorry, versus, I can't believe she did that to you. I can't believe she lined up with that pack of jackals to go after you, right? Now, the second is buying his perspective that he's the victim of his wife and her family.
Right.
Okay. The first one is validating his feelings. Sounded terrible. And he's going to feel connected to with that empathy. He's going to feel like I'm there. I don't have to go ahead and agree with his perspective about his wife's behavior. For one thing, I'm only getting his side of it.
Yes.
Okay. So what we teach people in marital first responders is be empathic to a person, not necessarily a perspective.
And so when you're running, you know, when people are coming and getting this training, how do they react to that? Because I know that as part of my training and part of what I do, even if I only have one person coming to me, because sometimes when people come to me for help, their spouse doesn't want to come, and there's this other side of my brain that sits outside and says, I'm only getting one person's perspective. There is another perspective here. But is that something that people inherently grasp, or is that something that maybe they struggle with a little bit?
No, they immediately get it.
Okay.
This is not rocket science. But
don't tell anybody that. We won't have jobs.
the challenge is implementing it. In other words, nobody resists this idea that we're only getting one perspective. And we all know it ourselves when we're beefing about something, you know, we're just giving one side. And we actually begin the training, both the face-to-face and the online one, with asking people to recall a particularly challenging situation where they were a confidant for somebody with a marital problem. And so we, you know, people, you know, they go back and relive some times where they have made mistakes. We also have people go through what we call the top 10 mistakes we make as confidants, you know, talking too much, or this one is side-taking.
Right.
And so by the time we get to the skills, people really, they know it doesn't do any good. It doesn't help. Maybe momentarily it doesn't. And the other thing, if you want to think about just raw self-interest in this, if you're presented something really quite inflammatory from somebody about their spouse, so your friend says your husband's cheated on her, she's devastated, and then you say, I wouldn't keep that bum around one more day.
Right.
Well, okay, you know, you got that off your chest, isn't that nice? But she wants to save her marriage. And she keeps the bum around. You've called him a bum or maybe something worse. I'm being kindly here.
Right.
And you have just attacked her husband and told her she shouldn't be married to him. Because you, brave person yourself, you know, probably not having gone through it, you know, just this bravo thing, you know, I'd be out of there. And so you may have lost a friend or put a wedge in your relationship.
Yeah, and I think people don't realize that. And again, sometimes I think when people are coming to a friend or a family member for help, they might not even really be sure what it is they're asking for. They're just they may be confused, you know, because there's a lot of normal stuff that goes on in marriages that people don't recognize as perfectly common and everybody does it and there's ways through that, to the extreme where, say, maybe they found out that their partner has been unfaithful to them and they're really in a lot of pain. And they don't necessarily even know what they're looking for. Is that pretty accurate?
Well, yeah, that's right. it may be just they're ventilating. So it's not like people, you know, if they come to us for therapy, we ask them early on what their goals are, right?
Right.
You don't do that with your friend. And so what is your goal for our conversation now? It just may have come up over mm-hmm. coffee, particularly, well, anything just might sort of pop up. And so that's why we teach people seven skills. And we divide them into LEAP and CAR. LEAP, L-E-A-P, are the basic mm-hmm. skills. Those are listen, empathize, affirm, and offer perspective. And those are the basic ones. So you can just be with somebody and listen and be empathic, say something affirming, if it seems reasonable to offer perspective. So you can always do that. The advanced ones, only for certain situations, are CAR, challenge, advise, and suggest resources. And mm-hmm. one of the most common mistakes that people make when somebody comes to them is somebody they may not know what they want in the conversation, but they just want a friend. And then
right.
the friend feels like they have to give them advice. So here's what you
right.
do. Okay? And in our survey where we ask people what's most unhelpful, useless advice was the top
mm-hmm.
one. So here you have the situation where the friend feels like they have to jump in with advice, and you're more apt to get in trouble yourself, giving inappropriate advice or turning somebody off. So what we teach people to do, and we have them practice it, just practice listening, being empathic, affirming, just hang in there with somebody, and then you might find out whether they need anything more from you.
Right, because I think that's one of the things that we all do, is that if somebody's coming to us with, I don't know, complaint, challenge, problem, whatever, there's this automatic thing that we have to fix it. We have to give them something to fix it, as opposed to just sit there with them, which can actually be really, really hard. And I think that may be one of the challenges, because I know that when I was trained, being able to sit in silence and not, mm-hmm. that it's really okay not to offer a suggestion or have a conversation. You just sit in that silence, which can be really, really hard to do.
Well, so here's a good time for me to make the distinction between what we do as therapists
mm-hmm.
and what people do as friends. You're not
going to
have too many women friends sitting in silence very long. Right?
Maybe we should, but maybe we don't, yeah.
It's not part of the culture. You may have men sit in silence, but you're not going to have women sit in silence. Leslie, in developing this, I came to this insight that whatever these sort of advanced skills that you and I might think we have as therapists on our
mm-hmm.
good days, right?
Right.
Are really most designed to how to build trust with a stranger within 50 minutes.
Right.
Where somebody, at the end of that, feels like they've been able to tell you important parts of the story, and they want to come back, and they want to let you know who they are in some sort of deep way.
Mm-hmm.
With marital first responders, we're talking about people who are already friends. They're already siblings. They already have relationships of trust. And so that's a given. That's from the very first word
mm-hmm.
somebody has chosen to be open with you. And so these can be much more kind of informal and much more casual. And the other thing is, if you make a mistake, this is what we tell people in the course, you have to be perfectionistic about it. If you fire
right.
off some smarty pants advice too soon that they go yes, but on, Just back up.
Yeah.
It's not the end of the world, because you have equity in the relationship.
So, what prompted you to develop this program?
Well, I've always been interested in grassroots support for marriages and intimate relationships. You know, on the ground support that has always seemed lacking. There's more support for parenting, although not enough, than there is for marriage and marriage-type relationships. So think about the ways in which, around parenting, people will share what it's like, you know, if they've had a terrible two-year-old, they can share what that was like when yours turns that way, or adolescence or whatever. But with marriage, we have this sort of, often this sort of wall of privacy and silence and a kind of a taboo about sharing, particularly sharing problems. And we know that it takes people a long time to get to a counselor or a therapist, a long time, even to their clergy person. So there's a lot of hurt, there's a lot of pain, there's a lot of mistakes people make that they wouldn't, that they could avoid if they had more grassroots support. And so in the marriage enrichment education area, I 10 years ago when I began to hear about marriage mentor programs, I said, well, that's the answer. You know, a lot of these are in faith communities. Very seasoned couples who can be paired up with another couple for support and learning, and the mentor couples learn how to do it well. But what I came to realize was that that works for engaged couples who are assigned to an older couple for mentoring, and they get along fine, and you know, and the engaged couple by definition have no problems, right? Because they're they can learn.
Everything's wonderful. Yeah, they don't need to learn anything.
That's right. But for what we call distressed couples, for couples in trouble, those mentor programs have not worked. What you can do is you can get the mentor couples themselves trained, because there's always good, stable couples that like to help. So you train them up, and nobody goes to them.
Right.
Nobody goes to them. And what I realized was that they don't go to them, I think, for two reasons. One is that people don't open up couple to couple very often about their marriages. They open up one to one.
Yes.
Okay? Very tricky to open up with your spouse there with two other people. That's number one. And number two, they don't open up to strangers. And that mentor couple, just because they're a member of your church, you know, your faith community, doesn't mean you know them and trust them. They're still strangers.
Right.
People will go to a stranger when they're in a lot of trouble, and that stranger has a professional title, because they have reason to believe you're trained, you're going to keep confidences, and so on.
Well, and I think that confidentiality piece is big.
Yeah.
Because when we're talking about the standard things that couples face that are serious enough, and I wish people would not wait until they're so serious, but you and I both know they do, things, struggling with their finances, struggling with their intimacy, those are not things that they want the person that they're going to see once a week in a social setting to know about.
Well, but sometimes they do. So let me go on, though, because if it's a very dear friend who they trust won't spread it to everybody, they will. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But if it's a mentor couple who they don't know but are in with church, they just don't know. So I for the mentor couples, I sort of gave that up as the answer. I had hoped it would be. And then about 4 or 5 years ago, I came across an article in a journal about an innovation in Australia in mental health care called mental health first aid training. And it was started by a husband-wife team, where the wife, a counselor who had mental health issues in her own background, and her husband, an academic, and they were out for a walk one day, and they asked themselves, why do we not have first aid responses for mental health crises like we have for physical health?
Right, makes sense.
Choking in the restaurant, you don't just watch them dying while you're waiting for 911. You try the Heimlich maneuver, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so they started something called mental health first aid training, which is a 12-hour training for lay people, paraprofessionals, to recognize mental health crises that are coming on, how to respond helpfully, and how to get people to good resources. And they spread it around Australia. Within 10 years, 1% of the entire adult population of Australia had been trained in that. So I went, okay, that's what I'm looking for. What I'm looking for is the training of what we now call natural confidants, people in the everyday life who others open up to about their marriage and relationship problems. People come to them because they see them as trustworthy, and presumably they keep confidences, and how to help them upgrade their ability to be intentionally helpful and not make mistakes. and how to get people to good resources when they need it. So that was the origin of the idea.
Great. This is Happily Ever After is just the beginning on webtalkradio.net, and I'm Leslie Dorries, and I'm talking today with Dr. William Dougherty about his new program, Marital First Responders. And if you've ever been included in a conversation where someone is complaining about their marriage and you don't know what to say, this program's for you. There are lots of times where people will have a best friend or they're close to a sibling, and you know it isn't maybe necessarily anything devastating, but it's like you were talking about, we don't think anything of going to another parent and say, you know, how did you potty train your kid? but we don't necessarily have that same thing for marriage, where you go to a friend and say, you know, how do you have a productive conversation about money with your spouse?
Right. That's right, because we're supposed to have these perfect relationships that we think other people do. And then when we do open up about it, maybe to our friend, it's because we're mad, we're upset, we're frustrated. And so part of what we, you know, in the course, we have people practice around the most common scenarios that occur, according to the research, between men and women in marriage, and that is that the woman's complaint is that she does it all. He doesn't participate enough. He's not an equal partner enough, and he doesn't open up to her very much. So he's not as good a partner she wants in terms of the workload or the emotional load.
Right.
That's the most common for women, wives, right? For husbands, his complaint that we have them practice the skills for is that she's on his case all the time. He can't do anything right.
Right.
Okay. And so we take that common thing and we have people work through sharing it, and the other person just practices at the beginning. Remember, leap, listen, empathize, affirm, just practice that first, and then they practice that plus offering perspective, and then we sort of, in the second part of the workshop, we kind of build up the intensity a little bit, because now your friend isn't just doing the everyday complaints, but your friend is now saying, well, he or she is having this, they're having this little emotional affair on the side, you know, there's somebody who really does get me, you know, who I have cappuccino
right.
with every day at work, right? But, of course, I haven't told
right.
my wife. So now it's getting more serious, and then we have people practice, how do you challenge, how do you advise, how do you suggest resources?
So tell me a little bit more about, I get the listen, I get the empathize, but tell me a little bit more about bringing the perspective. So what is it that a person, whether it would be as a couple or as an individual who's gone through the program, do differently with that P, that perspective?
Yeah, so perspective would be different from advice giving, in that a lot of times perspective is the sharing of your own experience. So you were talking about, you know, how we tend not to just ask somebody, how did you guys deal with this? So the perspective would be if I'm the guy and my friend is talking about his wife is on his case all the time, can't do anything right, and I might say, you know, we've been in and out of that at times in our marriage as well, and part of what I've learned to do is to just listen to underneath it, she's feeling kind of alone. I mean, she's feeling like she's too burdened, and I mean, maybe it comes out as criticism of me, but what's helped me is to just sort of, okay, to start to ask her what I can do and start to kind of sign up more and do more. Instead of just feeling kind of defensive or critical, what I've learned to do is try to get over that and just pitch in more.
Okay. Yeah, okay, so it gives them, it widens the lens for them a little bit. It gets them, because most of us kind of get caught with blinders. We see what we expect to see, you know, we don't necessarily think, oh, there's actually something deeper going on other than the complaint that just keeps flying at my head every time I walk in the room.
Right. Or for my wife, who is a natural marital first responder, she had a good friend who was very ill with cancer, very ill, and complaining that her husband really didn't want to talk about the cancer and just seemed kind of, you know, emotionally removed, although he was doing everything for her. My wife knew he was his wife's caregiver. He was doing everything, and very loyal man. And she also
right.
knew he's a guy who's never big into his feelings. And
yeah.
And so why would he be now? Okay, so what my wife said to her, she called her friend by name, I'll just say Jackie.
Right.
I bet Joe is scared to death.
Well, yeah.
And her friend went, her face friends just jaw dropped and went, of course, of course.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, yeah, I mean,
that was
yeah, I had a client a while back who they'd had a miscarriage, and she didn't think because he didn't fall apart and cry all the time that he didn't care.
Yeah.
And when she said that in my office, the look on his face was, you know, and it's like, of course he cared. He just cared in a different way because he was trying to be supportive of her.
Right.
You know, and
people can
yeah.
get they can get that from their friends who know their spouse,
mm-hmm.
okay, without, you know, so my wife had known them for 25 years.
Right.
So her friend knew that, and you know, that what was said was right. So that's
right.
an example of perspective.
So where is this program? How do people find it? Who would really be good candidates for this program?
Well, we call it confidants, and that is if you are somebody who others open up to about their relationships, then this is for you. And you want to do better with it, okay? You want
mm-hmm.
to be more mindful, more intentional. And the easiest way for, you know, listeners around the country would be to go to our website, maritalfirstresponders.com. And there's actually on the front page there's a free download of an interview that my daughter Elizabeth and I, and you know Elizabeth, did about
mm-hmm.
how do you approach a close family member.
Right.
That's really dicey. And then you know, very inexpensively you can download, I think we're just, you know, charging $7 or something for a 2-hour course. That we, you know, we videotape, so, you know, low production values is me talking and engaging an audience. So, but, you know, for not a lot of money, you can get a little course on this. And then, so maritalfirstresponders.com, and we have three cities around the country that where we're going to be going into some depth about, I can't announce those yet, but there's a major funder who is going to help us go into real depth. Going to aim for that 1% level for in 3 years
right.
in the next year. And for that, we're going to be developing a real kind of first class with great online learning tools. That'll be coming over the next 6 to 8 months.
So, because this was one of the things that I ran into a lot, and I kind of alluded to it in the beginning, where when people would find out what I would do, and I had a business coach early on in my career, and they said, we have to go to networking events. And I would do my little spiel, and I'd never get any referrals. And I would ask people, I said, well, what's the most difficult thing about referring somebody? And it wasn't that they weren't aware of people who needed help. They just didn't know how to say anything to them. So does the training, the marital first responder training, I'm not saying that you would necessarily start quizzing all of your friends and acquaintances, but is there some way that somebody who goes through this can kind of let people know that they don't have to go through this by themselves, that there are, that they and other people can offer a kind ear and a maybe different perspective?
That's the R in to leap in car, challenge.
Mm-hmm.
R is challenge, advise, and suggest resources. So we have
yeah.
a module on how do you bring up, when would you, and how
mm-hmm.
do you bring up to a friend, how do you have the conversation about them getting professional help?
Well, but maybe not. Yeah, but maybe not even necessarily the professional help. Although I do think that's, but just kind of, you know, is it necessarily that they have to wait if? I mean, people will sometimes tell me because they know what it is I do for a living. But But I actually had that with my sister once long before I even dreamed that marriage and family therapy existed. But is there something that, I don't know, that can let people know that the marital first responders exist? I'm here if you want to talk. Maybe not quite that.
Well, one of the things we've done with at a local church that's now up to 5% of the adults have been trained in marital first responders. Mm-hmm. There's a page on the website that says the following folks have been trained in marital first responders, and mm-hmm. and if you know them, they would welcome a conversation.
Okay. But how do we get it out of the churches?
Pardon me?
And how do we get it out of the churches and into the public?
The online is going to be a principal way to do that. It's hard to actually have any kind of marriage programming that's not in faith communities. Because there are very few social services and other groups to do anything in this area. So that's just the reality of it. But the online course, I think, is going to be a major way. So getting back to your question, we're wanting to train natural confidants who others come to. We mm-hmm. tell them one of the things you can do is refer to what you've learned in the course. But we're not wanting to train missionaries who go out there to tell people, come to me. Okay? So much of this goes on. In our data, 73% of American adults have had somebody confide in them about a marriage problem, and almost two-thirds have had somebody in the last year talk to them. So there's plenty of stuff to be done with just having an open ear and engaging in natural conversation.
So what I'm hearing you say is really that this is, if you're a person who finds that people talk to you about their relationships and you might want to have a little bit more training or a little bit, what's the word I'm looking for, a little bit more comfort in what you're providing, then this is where you want them to go.
What you get is more confidence and more skill.
Okay.
Because in our research, we found a lot of people lack confidence in this, particularly around serious problems, and that sometimes it's quite a lot of stress when your sister's marriage is in trouble and she's leaning on you, and this could go on for years.
Right.
And so we have a lot about how do you keep good boundaries. So we teach the seven skills of leap and car, and the eighth one, if you will, it's sort of not a specific strategy but an overall approach, is how do you keep good boundaries? How do you not get sucked in? But, you know, how do you be helpful but not try to solve everybody's problems and not take sides?
Yeah, and that's a very, very challenging skill in and of itself, especially when it's somebody you care deeply about, that you want to be helpful. And I'm so glad that you mentioned how stressful it can be to be one of those people where somebody's coming to you with the, you know, basically relationship SOS, help me, help me. And, you know, I just had this wonderful visual for what the marital first responders is, because I'll always ask my clients if they know why lifeguards carry those big plastic things. And they look at me like, no, why? I said, so when they go out to save somebody who's drowning, they hold on to the float device, not around the neck of the lifeguard, so they don't drown too. So you guys, so marital first responders is that life floater that people can hang on to, and the people who are answering aren't going to be taken under. But it's like here's this tool you can hold on to.
Right, exactly. Yep.
Well,
we had a woman attended a class. She was a teacher, and she stopped going to the teacher's lounge to have lunch because every time she went there, a secretary from the school would pounce on her and talk to her about her distressed marriage, and this went on for months. The teacher didn't know how to get out of it and started eating her lunch sitting in the hallway.
so her thing was to avoid it because, what do you say if you don't know what to say to somebody?
Right, and that's one of the things we talk about. I mean, the brief answer is you stop offering perspective, you don't offer advice, you let them know this sounds really hard, and you encourage them to get help.
Right. So at that point in time, then you bring in some potential resources.
Right. And but once you go, once you make that turn towards this, sounds like it's something, you know, bigger than, you know, than I can certainly help with.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, you have to stop offering any new perspectives, any
right.
Stop helping other than listen and say, "You're sorry, it's so bad." You pull
right.
back
and
from perspective, from challenge, from advice. You pull back. Because otherwise you're still you're sucked in. You don't ask them a lot of follow-up questions.
Right.
And the I like to use medical analogies. It's like somebody, your family member now, they've told you this, oh, this chest pain, you know, I can show this a breath too. Well, okay, at some point you stop with the, you know, you just keep the doctor.
Right. Yeah, at some point in time it's like, well, okay, I've told you everything I
right.
can think of.
Right.
Now,
yeah, we have
now
a little
what?
Module online about how do you get out of these situations, or how do you? Here's another one that we have a little module on, and that is your friend is your relationship has gotten all out of balance because all you're doing is talking about your friend's marriage,
right?
And you want to start avoiding her, usually her,
yeah.
And so we have some tips about how. How would you address this? How would you raise it? You know,
well, great.
In a way. But can you see why you have to think that through? You can't just blurt it out someday when you're sick of this.
Well,
you know?
It's sort of like my husband took taekwondo for years, and he would always get very frustrated with these, you know, one-day self-defense courses, because he says after 8 years of taking taekwondo, he says, I don't think I would be prepared to fight somebody off if I got attacked. But it's that same kind of thing where you have to practice, you have to have the knowledge, you have to have the skill set. And what I'm hearing is that marital first responders gives people who find themselves in the position of being a confidant, and I'm sure we all have, that it gives them the confidence because they actually have the tools and the training and they know what to do.
Yeah, and I don't want to overemphasize what you get out of a one-day course or an online
right.
thing, but it gives you some handles on this. You can think it through. You can say,
right.
what I'm doing isn't working. And one of the things I learned was that to say, I'm just really worried and concerned that you guys are digging mm-hmm. in and that you know, maybe you need some help. That once you make that turn towards suggesting they need other help, you might remember back off now from giving advice and perspective. You might remember that, okay?
Right. Right. And I think this is wonderful. And so what I want everybody to take away is you're giving the general public out there the opportunity to learn how to be better friends, better confidants, and how to help people not get sucked in an non-productive way, but participate from a very productive way with the marital first responders.
That's
so,
right.
Again, I've been talking to Dr. William Doherty, professor of marriage and family therapy at the University of Minnesota and the founder of this wonderful program called Marital First Responders. And so, listeners, if you want more information, go to their website, maritalfirstresponders.com. And keep listening for more helpful information on improving your marriage and now helping your friends and family in a productive way. And until next week, stay loving.